Thanks very much. Well, it's really good to be with you this morning. Great to come back to Wales. I got into a conversation on the train this morning coming up from Swansea. I'm not brilliant at chatting to people on the train, and I do pray about it, and the Lord provided an opportunity. Two guys sat at the table opposite me, opened a can, and they were heading up to London, as it turned out, North London, to watch the Arsenal game, which is, of course, is where I've come from. And the more we chatted, it was really interesting. The guy knew the farmer who bought the farm from my parents in Gower. And he's from Carmarthenshire. And it can only happen in Wales, in a sense, that kind of chatting and discovering connections. But we're going to be looking and thinking this morning about how we interact with people around us in the normal travelling of life. So that was me heading up to Cardiff from Swansea, London via Swansea, and ended up in a conversation and met someone who we distantly knew. We're going to think a bit about that this morning, thinking about the ordinariness of life, about being on mission as Christians, about church and mission and how it works together, and a term, missional Christianity, was put across the sort of subject that we're looking at this morning. But a question to reflect on. As church, are we... Now, I put a double punctuation there, and I'm going to leave you to finish the question. Is it a question, or is it a statement? Are we as church effectively scattering? I'm living and working in London, and like many churches, and the reason we went to London and ended up at this church in Highgate is because as a church, we have declined, and often we have that feeling that as church, we are dissipating. We're getting smaller and fewer, and more people leaving than joining, and so are we effectively just scattering? But in London, we've been reflecting on turning that into a question. It's the kind of question I want us to think about this morning, because after you've heard me for a short while, we're all going to scatter. And the question I want us to really think about this morning is, what are we going to do for the rest of the week? And in our scattering as church, are we going to be effective in mission? I wanted to put that question right up front, because that's what we're really going to be thinking about this morning as we disappear from one another's life in the next hour or so. What are we going to be doing, and is it going to make a difference, actually, to the growth of this particular local church, which is what this subject fits into, a series that you've been looking at over the past months. I've been in the book of Philippians. I know we just read from the book of Matthew there, but if you have a Bible and like to follow book of Philippians, a letter that Paul wrote to the church. It's an interesting letter because at the time of writing the letter, Paul was in chains. He was literally in a prison cell. He was not going anywhere. His evangelistic campaigns, his opportunities to preach were now narrowed down to the four walls of a cell. He couldn't move very far at all because he was either chained to the wall or chained to a soldier. And in that context, he writes a letter, and it's an incredible letter because it's a very joyful letter, and there's lots of themes in this letter that he writes, but the one that sort of caught my attention, here's a guy in a very restricted situation who couldn't run evangelistic campaigns or activities. In fact, in those days, the Christian church didn't even have buildings from which to operate and run activities. And you may have thought, in the context of that prison cell, chained up, unable to move, that the whole idea of being on mission for God, of doing something to spread the message of Jesus, was absolutely reduced to zero. No chance. And yet, actually, the letter is quite an incredible letter. Because as he writes this letter, he says to them, brothers and sisters, I want you to know that actually, by being here in prison, restricted in the way I am and unable to do a huge amount of activity that I used to do, but as a result of this, the gospel is actually going forward. He actually notes that the whole imperial guard, so those poor soldiers to whom he was chained, were getting an explanation about Jesus on a daily basis. And he goes on to observe, actually, that everyone who knew how he was functioning in that very restricted situation, all of the Christians themselves, were now actually having more confidence to share about Jesus in their life situations too. In that life situation, Paul was using it to share about Jesus. It doesn't matter, as followers of Jesus, it doesn't matter what life situation we are in, we are able to do something about communicating the message of Jesus. In Philippians chapter 1, if you read some of the earlier verses that he writes, in fact, he starts his letter this way by thanking God every time that he thought about these Philippian Christians. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray because of your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. Being confident of this, that God, he who began a good work in you, will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. And Paul said, it's right that I feel this way about you, because whether I am in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you participate with me in God's grace. And so another thing I noticed as I was thinking through this letter is that Paul was also seeing that this work of spreading the message of Jesus was something that we all actually participate in together. Every follower of Jesus Christ is part of this ministry of sharing about Jesus. As we look and think about that expression, fellowship in the gospel, participation in the work that God is doing, we realize that it is all about God's work. That being a Christian, being part of church, because the good news of Jesus has impacted us, we have got something really exciting, really positive, really helpful that not only has helped us, can help anyone, because Jesus Christ, God's Son, came into this world to deal with one of the deepest issues, the issue of sin, the issue of evil. The conversation we had on the train this morning ranged across an amazing range of things. We talked about Ukraine. We obviously talked about the football. We talked about farming a lot of the time because that was the common connection. But we also talked about the self-centeredness of humanity, the fact that there's a war in Europe today. Who would have thought it at this age and stage? And as we all agreed there, as we sat together, the problem is inside us, the problem of evil. And we have a good news message, which is how God has stepped into our world to make a difference in my life and in anyone's life. But Paul also said in those verses that we read briefly there, that it isn't just that we have a good news to share, it is that it's God's work. So often when we talk about evangelism and outreach, we feel as if, we can often feel a failure, that we don't often share this message with many other people. But what Paul says is, God who began this good work of sharing the message of Jesus, God who started this work in you will complete it. It reminds us that the work of impacting people with the message of Jesus is God's responsibility, number one. Not only, but number one, it is God's work. And so it's great to engage with God's work in the work of mission. But it is also, and I've gone and pressed the wrong button here. Thanks very much. That's great. It is also something that's about participating, about being partners together with Paul. Now, I know the Philippian church had sent Paul some money to encourage and support him, and in that sense, they were contributing. But as you carry on reading that letter of Philippians and read the letter of Philippians from this angle, you'll see that actually Paul was seeing the Philippian believers in their lives, and what they were doing was part and parcel of this same task, this same mission of spreading the message of Jesus, the fellowship of the gospel. The reference to Tolkien is entirely intentional with the Fellowship of the Ring. And you may want to think about that story. I often do. That pile of disparate people, all kinds of races and non-races in The Lord of the Rings, in that trilogy there. Each of them different. And often a lot of the film, a lot of the story, they were off doing different things. In fact, half of the time they were never together. In fact, most of the time they were never together. But they were all focused on one thing, which was the returning of the ring in one shape or form. all participating together. That's why that ancient word is put over that film, the Fellowship of the Ring. Paul here is talking about this fellowship in the gospel, this working together, everyone, every follower of Jesus, whatever shape and size, whatever race and whatever, as in Tolkien's story, yeah, all working together to actually achieve something. In our church in London, about January last year, I was really depressed, actually despairing. We had largely been 15 to 20 people for most of 2018, 2019, and sort of trying to regrow as a church, and it was really challenging. And one of the biggest challenges was actually getting people together. I mean, the 15, 20 of us. Even to get everyone together on Sunday was rare. We were often 8, 9, 10, 12 people, and you're thinking, how on earth are we going to grow as a church if we can't even, you know, commit one day a week, 1 hour a week to get together? And the Lord really gave me a picture that was really quite powerful. I've put it up on the screen there. It was one that we shared with the church. It's not the best in one sense. The color of the hands are not sufficiently mixed for my liking. But the picture, the concept gives the idea that this working together in mission with God is a participation where we each bring something that may look quite different for one another. But as we each function and work, something truly amazing happens. And we know with a jigsaw puzzle, eventually, as it were, when you flip it over, you can see the overall picture of what God is trying to achieve. It's this idea that every Christian who is part of the body of Christ is a missionary and is in the work, and that we're all in it together. In recent years, a term was kind of coined and has become quite commonly used in some circles, the idea of missional church or missional Christianity. And it's getting our heads around that actually our faith, our following of Jesus Christ, is essentially about God's mission in this world. And that to be a Christian and to be a follower of Jesus Christ is to be on mission. And therefore, mission, as the Bible presents it to us, is a whole life-consuming activity. It isn't something we do on Sunday, and then the rest of the week we do life. But rather, every one of us, as we go about life, we are doing mission. And it should actually fill our minds and our attention and be our focus of everything we do in life. You see, so often we have treated the concept of church as if it is part of life, as if we do church. So we do church on certain days of the week, and church does certain activities. And the challenge is, are you involved or can you be involved? And sometimes the shape of church and the activities of church, frankly, doesn't match my normal life. And that's what I was struggling with in London. The way we were trying to do church just didn't match the life of many Londoners. And so it was very hard to get everyone to participate in the activities of the church until we shifted our thinking towards understanding that church is mission. Mission is church, and life is mission, and mission is life. If we're followers of Jesus Christ, we need to be doing his business, going about the things that he is asking us to do. One of the ways of thinking about the Great Commission, Matthew 28, and this, I think, captures it really well, that there's a sense in which Jesus said, go. He was talking to his disciples. He was about to ascend up into heaven. And there's a sense in which he knew that as they watched him going up into heaven, the temptation would be to do what? To sit on their backside and carry on watching him going up into heaven. And so he sort of says to them, go, move, scatter. Don't sit here on the mountain worshiping me or worshiping the memory of me. Move. Go, scatter, and as you go, make disciples. That's the thrust of what Jesus is saying, that don't just sit there, don't just enjoy my presence, even though I'm leaving you and I will come back, don't worry about that, but move, scatter, go, and as you go, do my work, which is to help others to become followers of me. And so as we thought about these two elements, that within the Great Commission, there is a sense of scattering. In fact, it's the primary sense. But as you think about it more carefully, there's also the sense of gathering. And that, of course, is at the heart of what church is. But often as church, we reverse the two priorities. We have a tendency to do a lot of gathering and not enough scattering. And in fact, the truth be told, as churches over the last decades, we have, because of declining, we've tended to turn inwards and focus all of our efforts on the gathering. And in fact, we often challenge each other that you're not gathering enough. But actually, what is needed is much more scattering. Now, of course, if we just scatter and all disappear, then Mac as a church will dissipate and disappear. And as a leader, you can see that I was in panic mode, shall we say, 2 years ago. If we carry on like this, we'll be so disparate and so scattered that effectively there will be no local church left. There is a balance between these two things, but the balance is achieved by putting the focus where? If you want this church to grow, now this is the trick. If you want this church to grow, if you want more people on a Sunday morning, if you want more people in your activities, where do you need to put the focus? On the gathering or on the scattering? And you can see the temptation. What do you think? Where do you need to put the focus? Scattering. Eh? I'm not hearing anything. We can have a bit of chat here. See, our gut feeling is that we ought to make sure the gathering's really good, but actually it's on the scattering. It's on the scattering. That was a sort of shift in thinking that we made as a church, and I've kind of borrowed the slide I used with my own church and put it towards Mac as a church here. How are you going to grow? It's actually by recognizing that the purpose of getting together is to scatter. So you may say, well, surely as a church, you know, don't forget the assembling of yourself together, as if we're kind of Lego parts that need often clicking together. But yeah, sure, I get the idea. Making disciples does involve Bible teaching. It does involve learning to worship together, prayer, and there is a together dimension. But we need to always understand that in this era in which we live, what's the era? It's the era between the first return of Christ, sorry, the first coming of Christ and the second coming of Christ. In this era, church is not a church at rest. We'll have our rest and we'll have our time sitting at Jesus' feet and we'll have our time in worship and praise. That is as a focus, that's future. In this era, our role as church is to be on mission, constantly, individually on mission. And so when we gather, and I hope this is going to happen this morning. As we gather this morning, we will be strengthened in our scattering. That's the whole point, I think, of gathering, is that I get stronger in Jesus, so I get more effective when I'm out there on my own. If the only purpose of Sunday is that I've become very good at coming on Sunday, then I've really not got the idea of what church is all about. I come on Sunday to get to know Jesus better so that I can go. Because it is scattering that leads to growth. And it's a recognition as a church in London, we realize we needed to think this one through, that actually we will not grow by running more activities in the building, but we will grow if everyone is actually reaching people for Jesus. And that is how we will grow as a church. Now, it's not an either or, I recognize that. You have a building, we have a building, and we can do some effective things with our building. The sort of things that we are doing in London, and I've just put them down here, and that you may have find it helpful. Maybe this matches what you're trying to do as a group of believers too, but it's about getting our priorities right. That our priorities in seeking to grow as a church and to reach out is not about what we do together here in Mac. It's about missional living. It's about building relationships with people on the day-to-day, week-by-week basis in our own spheres of circle, in our own spheres of interest. It's about developing those relationships. It is about then making sure church supports that and is focused on actually the people who don't come and about thinking about church being less Sunday-centric. I remember talking about that here probably a year ago. And I don't know whether you've thought about it and made any kind of movement in that direction. For sure, we can use our building as a community help, but really, it is about sharpening the way in which we communicate Jesus in our daily lives, as well as in the activities that we do here in the building. We read Matthew chapter 5. The reason I read Matthew chapter 5, as we reflect on the salt and light, and those two ways, in a sense, you could say that salt and light, they are synonyms. They are two pictures that help us understand how our lives should function so that, as it says, people may see your good works and glorify God. So it's about exposing our lives to people so that as they see us and understand who we are and what we're about, they turn their focus towards God. It wasn't so much the light picture that caught me, because salt and light work differently. Light, in a sense, it radiates. You don't have to get particularly close to light for it to be effective. In fact, it can be very penetrating at a distance. You know what it's like when you've closed the curtains, if you're a light sleeper and you need darkness to sleep. I'm a good sleeper. She's not a good sleeper. I can sleep. I like darkness, but generally I can sleep if I'm horizontal. That's enough. She needs no light. And so after making sure all the curtains are closed and the TV remote is off or whatever else, we just about down in the darkness to sleep, and this plaintive voice says, "You've left the light on." And it's that little green emergency lighting. I'm thinking of a hotel, that tiny light somewhere around the corner, and the reflection of that light is radiating around the room. Light has that impact. It can do it at a distance. And you can think of a local church as a light in the community that radiates out the message of Jesus. But it was salt I wanted us to really focus on this morning. The concept of salt. Salt works very differently. Salt needs to have a scattering. Salt needs to be very thinly spread. Salt in a concentration kills. You know, it's like shaking salt on your chips and you have that Dead Sea feeling at the top and sort of a greasy, insipid pile at the bottom. God knows, Jesus knows, that to be effective as a church, we have to be spread really, really thinly. In fact, we can't work at a distance. Salt doesn't work at a distance. Salt needs that direct contact to be up close and personal with whatever it is that it's going to impact. And so as we think about the effect of salt and how we function as a church, we need to think about the way we live and the kind of circles of life we're in. Now, there's an exercise here. With the time frame given to me, it's not possible to do this exercise, but it's one of the things I'd like you to take away and do this morning, and that is to think about your circles of influence. Maybe even for 5 seconds, you can start putting some names in your mind. Or let me ask you a question. Mentally run down the names of the people that you had a conversation with last week. Okay, don't look at me. Just think about that yourself. Any conversation, rugby, football, cooking, gardening, work, sales, conversation, anyone that you had a reasonable conversation with last week. Just put your hand up. How many can say I had probably 5 conversations last week with people? 5 different people. How many could say 10? Probably 10. How many could say maybe 15? Now, I didn't give you enough time to probably get a list of 15, but I know what's happening here. Just multiply together the number of conversations we all had last week with people. We're already in the hundreds. You get my point? In 1 week, you collectively have had hundreds of conversations with hundreds of people in a small group of Christians. I did it here, and you can think about it in your own life. This is partly fictitious, but in terms of family, some of us have many perhaps step relationships, close work, people at work, people like neighbors. We borrow things off. They borrow things off us. We each have these kind of relationships around us. And if you wanted to extend this exercise, then you recognize that maybe James, my stepson, fictitious, James has two schoolmates he plays football with. And then, of course, Peter across the road has a partner. They've got some young kids. And so that network of people, you maybe thought 10, 20 people, rapidly extends into hundreds when you start thinking about it. Now, of course, we can't go deep with everyone all the time, but we can make a significant impact in the ones and twos amongst those that we are in connection with. In finishing, I'd like us to read a passage from John chapter 4. Peter's going to read it to us. It is one of the sermons that Jesus never preached, and that's one of the challenges, I think, with many of us and the thought of evangelism as an outreach. We immediately think you need to do what I'm doing and standing up in front and giving an extended sermon. Jesus didn't preach many sermons. John chapter 4 is one of these occasions of the sermons that Jesus didn't preach. And as we listen to this story, I want you to just think on how Jesus handled a conversation with a random person at a random place, at least seemingly random, and how that conversation developed.
Now Jesus had to go through Samaria, so he came to the town in Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that's saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." Jesus said to her, "Go, call your husband and come here." The woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You're right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you've had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you've said is true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you're a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where we should worship." Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know the Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he."
I've got to say very little in finishing. I just wanted you to sort of think about those people that you reminded yourself of, you had a conversation with last week. And just to reflect how you could shape the conversations you're going to have this week in the kind of way that Jesus did. Now, I know that you say, well, that was pretty amazing, how to move a conversation from thirst and water at a well to a revelation of who Jesus is to that person. And I guess Jesus was quite skillful at it. But what I really noticed most of all is that he began by exposing his own vulnerability. And I just want you to think about that. As you go about this week living, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of needs and wants, a lot of times that you're going to feel thirsty and tired and you want someone to help you. I just found that intriguing, that one of the best ways perhaps to begin engaging with people and eventually share Christ with them is not by telling them how much we've got and how we need nothing, but by simply asking for a drink of water. And then the conversation may develop in ways that you may never imagine. It's just that intentionality to think about scattering from here this morning and just in your normal moving around, traveling, living, working, eating, whatever you're going to do this week, to intentionally draw Jesus into the picture. May God help us this week as we go about doing that and realize that this is really how Jesus functioned. He didn't preach masses of sermons. He just did life with people, and as he met them, he just shared a good news story with them. And the rest, so to speak, is history. May God inspire us, help us, and encourage us, because this is what it's all about, participating together as church in mission. And may our gathering today actually lead to effective scattering, so that when we get back together next time, maybe there'll be more, because we've brought our friends along.